You're tuned to 90.5 WICN, Jazz Plus for New England. You can follow us on Facebook and Twitter. Listen online at WICN.org. Good evening, I'm Al Vohner, and this is this week's edition of The Public Eye. So nice to have you with us. Okay, you've probably talked about it. I know I have talked about it to friends and family. I think it's a conversation that's probably being held from coast to coast and beyond. Certainly a topic that affects people all over the globe, and that is economics. Why do we see less in our paycheck? Why haven't our paychecks or the money we've saved go further than we thought they would? Why are taxes going up? So many questions that the average consumer has, many times not able to answer those questions, whether it's through a television broadcast, news broadcasts, not always clearly explaining to every individual what's going on. Well, that's why I've invited my guest this week, educator and author Howard Yaris. His new book is Understandable Economics, it's a book that is very user-friendly. One that kind of explains things very clearly and I think would be very helpful to you, our listeners. So for the next half hour, we'll be talking with Howard Yaris about understandable economics and many of the same topics that all of you are very concerned about and very well may be. And this could be a direction in helping you. Howard, nice to have you with us.
Great to be here. Thank you for having me.
You know, you and I talked a little bit before broadcast and, no secrets. People, you know, you hear it, family, friends, coworkers, everybody's saying the same thing. Geez, I got this great job, but I don't feel like I can, that I can advance beyond this. I mean, I've got a heavy mortgage, I got kids in college, I've got weekly expenses, monthly expenses, mortgage, blah, blah, blah. It never seems to end for anybody. I guess unless you're in that 1%, the super wealthy maybe don't have to worry about those things. But why does it always seem that the average man or woman across the globe, as I said at the outset, always take on the brunt of the economics that takes place globally, not just here in this country?
Well, you introduced this by saying there's a lot going on, and there really is. And the point that I try to make in the book, and the point that everyone has to realize, is that if you leave important economic decisions to the economists, to the quote-unquote experts, to whomever, you may not get what you want. Economics is about making choices. Who gets what? Who does what? Who gets what opportunity? And it's so important that voters, Americans, individual people, assert their own values, assert their own desires into that. Economics is not something where it's not like physics, where you plug a bunch of numbers into a formula and out comes an answer. It's about who gets what and who does what and how we divide up the enormous pie that the American economy turns out every year. So people need to get involved. What's going on now? Let's look at what's going on now is the best way to figure out what's going on. We had a large bill go through Congress, which gave an enormous tax cut, which is skewed very much to wealthy people. So that's a great example of something that was done by our government, which greatly affects everyone's budget. Now, I try to be nonpartisan. You can look at that and say, I agree with that. But the point is you need to look at it. People need to get involved. And by getting involved, they're going to have outcomes that they feel are more acceptable to them.
And that's exactly how I personally feel. And you're right. I watched, year after year, but more importantly, this particular administration, this particular Congress I'm talking about. And I thought all the rhetoric, all the talk was about saving the average American, the average man and woman, hardworking man and woman, some real serious money. There was talk about rebate checks, this, that, and the other thing. Then tariffs came into play. And then there's the argument of whether or not that's a good thing. Do we want to, are we really going to bring jobs back here as opposed to abroad? The other thing is interest rates. The Fed plays a role in this. So at the end of the day, Howard, I don't know about you, but my head is spinning. It's like, okay, wait a minute. The Fed's got a role in this. Congress has a role in this. The president and his administration certainly have a role in this. The business community has a role in this. what does the average man and woman get to say, and how are they going to be? I mean, you have a better vision of what might take place 6-12 months down the road. Is all of this really going to benefit you and I, the average American?
Here's the thing. We're living in a democracy. We are. And if people sit back, and this is what I was trying to say before, and not try to understand these issues. The subtitle of the book is Because Understanding Our Economy is Easier Than You Think and More Important Than You Know. And the reason why I say it's more important than you know is because if you just listen to the rhetoric or to some of the bombast, you're not going to really think about how are these policies going to affect me. And I'll give you one excellent example. Tariffs. What are tariffs? Three words. I love short answers. Taxes on imports. There are taxes on imports. A lot of stuff we buy comes from abroad. So we're paying higher taxes, significantly higher taxes, the highest taxes in 100 years on imports. Does that make the average person's life better? Take some gadget that comes from China at $20. When they slap on a 25% tariff, now costs them $25. How does that make the average person's life better? These are the things you have to think through. There was a lot of rhetoric about, I don't want to use the actual phrase making America great again, but there was a lot of rhetoric about making it easier for the average person. And I, if you just listen to the rhetoric, it sounds great. It's important to make it better for the average person. But what does changing the price from $20 to $25 do for the average person? And that's what people have to, again, It's not that complicated. It's not rocket science to think through the effect a tax on anything you buy that comes from abroad will do to your pocketbook. And I just want to make one more point. It's not just imported goods. And I'll just want to say this one more thing. Once the tax, the gadget from China goes from $20 to $25, what do you think the American producer of that gadget thinks about his pricing? He or she now says, wow, my competitor just went from 20 to 25. Maybe I can go to 24 and not lose any customers. So the bottom line, this is, again, not rocket science. This is just logic and common sense. All prices go up.
I want to use, I'm laughing here because I'm thinking just recently, and I make a weekly trip to the local dollar store. Many people have those in their communities, and there isn't a thing in that store, or any of those stores anymore, that is a dollar anymore. I've noticed $1.25, $1.50, and just, you know, based on what you said, Howard, is that, you know, somebody's, you got to pass on the cost. Otherwise, you know, the cost of doing business goes up and then you go out of business. So it's a never ending cycle. And I want to come back and talk a little bit more about that kind of thing. But I want to just take a quick pause and remind our listeners that you're tuned to 90.5 WICN, Jazz Plus for New England. You can follow us on Facebook and Twitter. Listen online at WICN.org. I'm Al Voner, and my guest this week is a well-known author and educator, Howard Yaris. His new book is Understandable, and I emphasize understandable economics, really simplifying what's going on in the economy. And Howard, you said something earlier that, you know, I try very hard not to pick up the newspaper and focus on the financial section. I try not to listen to, like you said, all the rhetoric on the news stations. You're bombarded on the social media, on the web about the economy. But it's just so difficult. I mean, the average person wakes up in the morning and, okay, need gas for the car. I'm going to pick up groceries on the way home. Oh, this week the electric bill is due. Oh, next week is taxes. It just seems that even if you shut everything off, you're still going to be faced with major economic decisions. And I'm just wondering, when does this thing become beneficial, if ever, for the average American?
When the average American finally gets involved with the issues and figures out which politicians are really supporting the policies that they think will benefit them. For instance, I'll give you another for instance, tax cuts. a lot of politicians and a lot of people say, well, if we focus tax cuts on wealthy people, it will help the economy. Now, let's use common sense. What does Bill Gates do when he gets a tax cut or a tax rebate? You think he runs out with his family to the nearby restaurant and says we could finally go? No, it just gets lumped in with his massive savings. It doesn't do anything for the economy. What happens when a relatively poorer person or someone lower middle income or middle income gets a tax break? They have a whole long list of things they'd like to do or buy if they had more money, and they almost immediately go out and spend it. And what happens when someone, when more and more people go out and spend money? Businesses say, hey, we have to hire more people. We have to expand. The economy improves. And so that, again, this is not rocket science. This is something, if you think through the logic of it, you can figure it out. So why do we hear tax cuts help the wealthy? Well, I think there are a lot of politically motivated people who promote this for their own benefit or their campaign donors' benefit. And it's important to for people to be engaged. Again, this was just not that complicated, to see through the rhetoric, decide what policies would benefit them, and then find politicians who would support them.
With that said, and I just want to, I'm looking at some of the liner notes from the book. I mean, you talk about, you know, and we discussed this, you mentioned tariffs. We talk about huge deficits that the government is, you know, is inheriting that's going to be certainly weighing in on the American consumer. Inflation, the Fed, Fed policymaking, possible tax cuts. All of this plays into the into the picture. But as you said, at the end of the day, what do you hear from, especially when you were doing research for Understandable Economics? What issue, if there is any one, I'm sure there were many, in your research that you felt was most important to any American taxpayer? I mean, what would make life better? Do we get government out of this altogether, which I know sounds ludicrous because that's never going to happen. But, you know, we really depend on our lawmakers at the state level, at the local level, and at the federal level that make policy, as you said, that the average consumer doesn't really get a whole lot to say about it. People say, oh, yeah, well, when you go to vote, that's not really speaking about your economic situation. You're voting for an individual that you hope will speak on your behalf. But what have you heard in doing research for Understandable Economics that really impacts us?
Well, the economy, it's a massive economy, and there's a lot going on. As you said, there's the Fed, there's the imports, there's GDP, there's a lot. And in 220 pages, the book is relatively short and a relatively easy read. I tried to give readers the foundational knowledge, and again, it's not that complicated on most of these things. And so if you read the book, I think you could use your own good judgment and good common sense to think through what would be best for you, because everyone's in a very different situation. Bill Gates is in a much different situation than the average person. So the government's policies greatly affect how we all fare economically. If money is invested in education and providing opportunity to kids, you get a different kind of economy than if you cut back on those programs. So it's really important for people to assert their values. Let me say one thing. You often hear, and this is something you hear a lot about, almost as much as tariffs these days, the national debt. It's $29 trillion. Mm. Now, I can't get my head around what $1 trillion is. I don't think anyone really can. I remember a congressperson mixing up a billion and a million, and I remember thinking that that's like me telling someone I had a really great sandwich today. I don't remember whether it was $10 or $10,000. It's the same magnitude of difference. So what I do in the book is I break it down on a per American basis, $87,000 per American. That's a number we could all get our heads around.
Right.
And so we all, the nation has a debt of $87,000 per person. Is that an existential bankruptcy-inducing kind of debt? Well, if someone took an $87,000 loan to go to medical school, or to start a promising business? Would you say they're being irresponsible? Would you say they're flirting with bankruptcy and economic devastation? No. But if they took it just to push the grocery bill down the road, or to feed a drug habit, or to go on some extravagant vacation, you'd say yes. So it comes down to what you're spending the money on. And only, and that's, there's no right answer. There's no expert who can tell you this makes sense. People have to be involved. And if they're not involved, they may very well not get what they like.
Yeah, right. It makes perfect sense. One thing that stuck out for me personally, Howard, is the, and you talk about this in the book, is the growing expanse between the haves and the haves not. In other words, the inequality. I know in my own community, you know, everybody sees poverty, everybody sees affluency. And then there's supposed to be something in the middle. The other thing I see is consumers, and you mentioned this, you know, be educated, know what your limitations are. I also feel that in some ways, and this is, I'm not trying to insult anybody. I'm not trying to point the finger. We're all guilty. As you said, you go through life and you say, you know, I'm working my butt off here. I would like to have a few indulgences. And then you find out that there are two BMWs in the driveway. There's a half a million today with property values. $500,000 mortgage seems, you know, 30, 40 years ago would have seemed outrageous. Today it's the norm. College tuitions. And I sit there sometimes and I'm saying to myself, how are these people doing it? Are they able to save anything? Is there anything at the end of the road that they can bank on? I almost think that the consumers sometimes put themselves in a position where they'll never see the light of day when it comes to financial freedom. Am I being a little too extreme?
You know, at the very first chapter of the book, I talk about the different kinds of political systems. And people talk about capitalism or socialism and all these other isms. The bottom line is there are two basic ways you can run a society. All the decisions are made centrally, or the decisions are made locally by individuals. And every society that exists in the real world is somewhere in the middle. In North Korea, there's more central control, but there is some individuals do have some agency. And in the United States, obviously, it's not a situation where everyone is free to do whatever they want. The government is very involved in people's lives. So we have a situation, it's just impractical to have a society where the government is just not involved. You need the government involved, and you need it to be not overwhelmingly involved. So that's a balance that has to be struck. But once that balance is struck, the government has a lot of control through the tax system, primarily, of where the money goes. I'll just cite one fact: all income, every dollar of income from today all the way back to the beginning of time, is either investment income or work income. Those are the only two ways to get money. And in America, we tax investment income generally at a lower rate than we tax work income. And that's a decision that our elected representatives made. I think it's not that complicated to get your head around that. If you make money through dividends on stocks or interest payments on bonds, your income is taxed at a lower rate than someone who goes to a school to teach or a factory to work. Warren Buffett, the multi-billionaire, once said he pays a lower tax rate than his secretary, because he earns his money through investments and she earns it through a salary. So this is a decision that was made by our representatives. Do we feel it's a good decision? And I think if a different decision were made, if work income were taxed at a lower rate than investment income, almost by definition, working people might have an easier time. They might have a few more dollars in their pocket. So those are the kinds of things that people have to be involved in. If they feel strongly that would be good for the economy, good for them, they need to vet politicians for that policy, and not just vote for politicians who have the nicest commercials or just blandly say they're going to make America a great place. They need to look for those policies, because if they don't, this is a point I always make. They may find they're getting a policy radically different from the one they'd want.
And I think most people would agree with that. And most people are seeing that happen. And the problem is, I don't think there is a lot of vetting involved. I think we've become so fragmented and splintered as a people. I'm talking about this nation. And I'm not just talking about in terms of political parties. I'm just talking about just ideologies. I mean, I'm very friendly with my next door neighbor, but I won't talk economics with that individual, because that's when we differ tremendously. And I'm thinking, God, if we couldn't get just a half a dozen of us who live across the street from each other to agree on who would be best suited, to deliver policy for us and represent us, we're in big trouble. So that fragmentation, that splintering, that doesn't help matters either.
Yeah, I think the average voter should ask, what exactly are you going to do for me?
Right.
I don't want to hear the rhetoric. I don't want to hear about your theoretical ideas. I want to know exactly what you're going to do for me. And I want to raise one other thing. A lot of people talk about Social Security going bankrupt. Have you heard that?
Oh, every day. It scares the hell out of me.
How come they don't talk about the Pentagon going bankrupt? How come they don't talk about the State Department going bankrupt? Every federal program is funded by the U.S. Congress. If the U.S. Congress funds it, it's fine. If the U.S. Congress doesn't fund it, it goes bankrupt. It goes under. Why is Social Security different? Again, people can't be passive. If you're passive, you get taken advantage of. I grew up in New York. That's a rule of thumb here. You just can't sit back and say, oh, it's just going to be fine. You need to see it for what it is. When politicians dangle Social Security going bankrupt in front of you, tell them, what are you talking about? You fund Social Security. If you fund it, it's fine. If you don't fund it, it's a problem. It's the same thing as the Pentagon or the White House budget or any of the other million things the federal government does. They use that rhetoric to fool people, to mislead people. And people who just are passive and indifferent will get fooled and cheated. And that's what's happening. And that's why it's so important to, I'm plugging in the book here, but to read my book, or maybe there's another book that also tries to explain this in a very simple way, simple and entertaining way. But to learn about what's going on, it's just not that complicated. And then to assert your own views and your own values into the mix.
It makes perfect sense. And your book, Understandable Economics, is certainly, as I said, I was an economics major. So reading this, I didn't think of it as a difficult read at all. It was a roadmap for anybody. But in one point before we close out, you're exactly right. All of us who are currently eligible for Social Security, that's the one thing I hear from everybody is, oh my God, it's the only source of income I have. I've lost my husband or I lost my wife. They really do. They really do put the scare into people, and it's time to back off and just, as they say.
Yeah, to tell the Congress people to do their job. Why aren't they worried that we're not going to have a defense force to guard the border? We won't if Congress doesn't fund it, and we will if Congress does. It's the same thing with Social Security.
Exactly. And it makes perfect sense. Howard, just real quick, if people want to, obviously Understandable Economics is out there on bookstore shelves. But if they want to post questions to you directly, get more information about the work you've been doing, is there a way to reaching out to you?
Oh, I'd love to hear from people. My website is howardyarus.com, howardyarus.com. And I'd love to hear from people.
That is the invitation. Howard has left the door open, so it's up to you to follow up. Again, the book is Understandable Economics, a very readable, a really great roadmap in understanding the hodgepodge that so many people feel that they don't understand. The government making it more difficult than it needs to be, as Howard has explained. Any questions about the broadcast, you can certainly give us a call here at the studios of WICN. Phone number is 508-752-0700. You can pose any comments, questions, or feedback to me directly. I certainly welcome that. That's Al Vona, V-U-O-N-A, at hotmail.com. For the Public Eye, this is Al Vona. Thank you so much for tuning in.